Welcome to UVA Through the Years, the Student Experiences. My name is Iman Lyons. I'm a current fourth year at the university. Just to give you a little idea of what I do outside the classroom, before we get into the trailblazing stories of the women who are sitting to my left, I currently serve as tri-chair for the university's resident staff program, also involved in the Greek community, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, and I'm also a part of Air Force ROTC, which I've been involved in throughout my 4 years at the university. So we'll also right now just get into some introductions. We'll have some self-introductions from our panelists, women who have truly set the path for myself. So I'm going to pass the mic down, and you can introduce yourself.
Okay, sure. My name is Glenn Key. I was graduated from the college in 86, the law school in 89. I was active in the Alumni Association, and I'm currently on the Board of Visitors.
My name is Deborah Freitas-Lopez, and I graduated in 1998 and then again in 2000 with a Master's of Science in Health Valuation. I've done a lot on campus, on grounds.
My name's Janet Palmer Hamill. I was in the class of 1974, heretofore known as the Class of Gritty.
Class of Gritty, please stand up.
We may have the biggest turnout, too.
So. Nice.
I graduated in 74. I came back later for a master's in public administration and finally finished my thesis in 1978, though that was a year-and-a-half program. I went to work in Richmond, various other places, did public service, finally landing in Houston, where I retired. I've had three children come through UVA, and both of our children will graduate next year. We'll be so glad. One from here, one from Suwannee.
As you may have read, Dawn Staley was intended to be with us today, but due to a conflict elsewhere, she's unable to join us. So if there are any student athletes that would like to join to the conversation, please feel free to raise your hand, and we'll make sure to get your experience heard as well throughout this panel. So before we get started, I just kind of want to know what involvements we had here while you were here at UVA. So if you can just raise your hand if you weren't involved in res staff.
In what?
Resident
what?
Staff. What about the Cavalier Daily? Any student athletes? Oh, wow. Any student council members?
Okay.
So we have a wide variety of involvement. So we look forward to hearing some of your experiences as well as the experiences of our panelists. So feel free to raise your hand, and we'll try to get some of those insights heard. So now we'll begin with the panel questions, which you've all been waiting for. So we'll just go down, and you guys can answer as you'd like. What was unique about being here during your particular decade?
I think for me, particularly after hearing the panels this morning, is my generation of women didn't think twice about being active or assuming leadership positions. I would say in my class, most of the leadership positions were held by women. And there was also, I think, the beginning of the explosion of the nationally ranked women's sports programs. So my, you know, guy classmates followed women's sports. You know, maybe not with the same volume and vigor of male sports, but they followed them pretty closely, particularly the women's basketball team.
I have to agree with Glenn that for me and my classmates, taking leadership positions and making changes if you felt like it was needed on grounds was not a big deal for women as well as for males. For us, as a Latina on grounds, I think for me the biggest issue became about diversity and inclusion. And really, truly speaking and living multiculturalism.
Well, clearly what defined the time I was here was that women came to the university that had been all male, or largely all male, as we've been finding out, for more than 150 years. You know, in the middle of that, thank you, in the middle of that, there was just great societal change. And a comment made earlier is far better than anything I could come up with, which is that there was a lot of distractions at the time, and women were just one of them, and in some ways we slipped in under the radar. And it had infiltrated thoroughly before they noticed. And so it was an interesting time. There was a lot of questioning and experimenting. It was exciting.
Were there any specific people or events that were instrumental in bringing parity to the lives of women students?
I think for many of us, some of the administrators that I worked with really helped you pave the way. I know now there is a dean of Latino Affairs, Hispanic Latino Affairs on grounds, but when I was here, there was 0.3% Latinos. We probably can, you know, probably a similar experience that you had as, you know, and I no longer had as a woman per se, but as a Latina, I did. And having professors and other faculty members and administrators be there for you as a support mechanism and telling you and helping you find your way and find a niche for you definitely was helpful.
It's interesting. When I saw this question, I wrote down, no one told me that there wasn't parity. I mean, I think in our class, it was, we just came in assuming that we were equals, we were there in large numbers, and, you know, we'd all come from schools where there was equality. We just didn't, it just didn't occur to us that there wasn't parity. I funneled in pretty quickly to the resident staff program, which is by necessity female-led, at least part of it, because you have to have female counselors. So I think maybe I had an easier path than some of my classmates who went to traditionally all-male situations like Cavalier Daily and Jefferson Debate Society and maybe didn't feel as welcome as I did. But you'll have to hear their story sometime. They know who they are.
You know, it's interesting. I think it's women of your generation who were not only active as students but continue to be active as alums, because I think one of the most unique aspects of the university experience is the fact that you do have this unusual dynamic of strong ties and relationships as a student with alumni. You meet them at events. You have common traditions. And when I was a student and I was going to these alumni events, there were all these really powerful, successful, engaged women who were graduates of the university who continued their university career in the alumni community unapologetically, assumed leadership positions, were innovators in starting new alumni programs and foundations. So telling that story by their presence, I think, was a part of inspiring women, students, to think that, you know, they had every right and authority to be as active in the university experience.
Can you give us a taste of what activities you were involved in or what activities were available to you while you were on grounds, and also what activities may not have been open for you to participate in?
I was chairman of the honor committee, and you and I are in the same sorority. I was never elected president of the sorority, and I was never that qualified. I would say there's a level of athleticism that was a high benchmark at the university. So I was a student athlete in high school, but nowhere near the ability to play at the collegiate level at the university. And so that was actually an interesting phenomenon, I think, as a woman to realize that you thought you could do sort of everything and have this well-rounded experience, and then you come to the University of Virginia, and there are women athletes who are just in the stratosphere compared to your high school experience.
I was a member and then later became the president of the College of Arts and Sciences. Back then it was called the College Advisory Board. I don't know if it's still the same. I was also on the Student Council. I participated in the Honor Society my first 2 years here. And then I did do several things for the Latino community. I helped establish a peer mentoring program, similar to the one that was already here for African-American students. Actually, Dean Terry helped me establish it for Latino students. And then later I established a Latina sorority on campus.
I have to laugh when they say, were there activities, you know, at UVA when you came? And the answer was, well, no, there weren't. But the fascinating thing is I remember walking by Mem Gym in one of those beautiful days that when you're walking around UVA and you're just feel so glad that you're there. You feel so honored. And I thought, you know, I think I'll just go and see if I can, you know, try out for the women's basketball team. And I remember thinking, oh, crap. They don't have a women's basketball team. And so, you know, the answer is that there were apparently enough of us that wanted to do that, that they formed a club the next year. And that's kind of how it went. You had these stunning moments where you went, well, they don't have anything. Well, okay, well, what are you going to do now? And you talk. And I had been involved in choir in high school, and so I thought, oh, I kind of miss that. Well, they didn't have any choir that women were in, and not enough of them to be part of anything. So somehow someone somewhere directed me over to Charlottesville Oratorio. So I was involved in that. And then I got involved in first-year council. And so, you know, that raised my level of involvement. And finally, I think my most significant involvement was at the end of my first year, I was got accepted as a resident staff member. And that was my path thereafter. I just kind of moved up through that program and through various offshoots of that had to develop, some for not particularly great reasons. They had a women's safety committee. Because the first year we were here, nobody knew we were here. And I think we got a little bold. And the second year, we had some problems. And so we started educating women about how to be more safe. And the same thing we had a human sexuality committee. And I don't need to tell you why we decided to have that. And so just to, you know, try and educate people a little bit more about that. But that was my path. And I never lacked for things to do. I never felt like my plate was empty. So I never felt like I was deprived of anything.
I think it'd be interesting to hear what you interpret as the differences between being a female student and a male student during your decade at the university, or if there were any differences at all.
I think probably the fundamental difference was probably the social dating scene. There probably wasn't full parity there, where although women were active in student activities and excelling academically in terms of dating, there was still a traditional aspect to men taking the lead on dating and men, you know, asking women out and some sort of that structure. So I would say dating.
You know, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, that was still the case when I went to school. But I was a chemistry major, and so there weren't a lot of women in my major. I think there were three of us out of the bunch. So dealing with that and dealing with the fact that there weren't a lot of master's students or even doctorate students that you can look to, or even professors, was a little hard because you couldn't really, there was no one there like you who could mentor you and tell you that you were going to get through that organic class or inorganic class as you got higher up. So I think that was one place where not males had it easier per se, because it's coursework. But they had other people that, you know, they could easily speak to and feel comfortable with.
The obvious thing was that there was just so few women. And that, you know, that was really tangible. I remember walking to class one day and noticing that I had not seen a single other woman until I walked through the class to the door of my classroom. And that was just stunning. And you tended to stick out, and that got... It's overwhelming after a while. You just really want no one to notice you because you get noticed too much. I do think that we lacked for mentors. The boys, listen to me. I'm getting revenge. The men had others to look to see what opportunities they had. We were kind of making them up as we went along. I'm sure we were tap dancing real fast and looked like we knew what we were doing, but we didn't. And so we just, you know, just charged on ahead. We just didn't know any better.
I'd love to hear your reflections, too.
Oh.
Yeah, we aren't.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let me jump in.
She's okay. Being the moderator.
Yeah. Currently, for me, it's hard to pinpoint any real differences or distinctions between myself and my male classmates. I can especially look to ROTC as a point that maybe I would be able to see those things if, because I don't see it in ROTC and definitely, I mean, in rest staff and not in my sorority. But within ROTC, our top student leadership position is obtained by a woman. So she's our cadet wing commander. So I don't think there's any limitations on what I can and can't do. And I felt, you know, throughout all of my involvements, very supported also by the university. Well, it's faculty. There's a lot of faculty and staff who are female who I can turn to as mentors for academics and also outside of the classroom. So definitely blessed in that capacity. Any other experiences? Anybody would like to share any differences that they noticed while they were here at the university?
I thought of one more thing.
Oh.
And that was when we came, we felt the need to prove that we deserved to be here. So I think there was a lot of pressure to do well, to get involved, and to be good examples. And I think that was pressure we put on ourselves, mm-hmm. not that anybody else necessarily put that on it. But.
Mm-hmm.
We can hear her. She sings opera.
No. Not really. No, I was also in the class of 74 and a good friend of Janet's, and I wish we'd had you with me to start that women's group in the music department because it was really a bastion of male tradition. I went to Mr. Loach one time and asked him. I did a lot of singing, actually solos too, with productions there. But I said, why don't we have a group for women? Because all I could do was sing in the university singers, but being that they took women from the community, they got no funding. All the money went to the Glee Club, which got to tour. So Mr. Loach was very nice. He said, why don't you start a madrigal group? I didn't, but that was it. And one other comment about the men and women. I remember when we got there, there was still the tradition of the men wearing the coats and ties. Unimaginable now. And also the tradition that they had, because they hadn't had women there before, of, what was it, going down the road?
Rolling down the road.
Rolling down the road, that's right. And I remember many complaints among my female peers about not having a date on Saturday night because they were all at Sweetbriar, Mary Washington, all those other schools.
That was weird.
Hi, I'm from the class of 2001. I moved to Charlottesville in 1979, and I had a young family, and I thought that I would be able to attend the university part-time. That was my impression, and get my degree. And then I found out you can't do that. but circumstances arrived in my life so I could go back to school full-time, and I got my degree when I was 45 years old here. So I was always the only non-traditionally aged student in my classes. And I'd say that to my professors, and they said, well, we always have another non-traditional age. I mean, there's always one of you in all of our classes. But I never knew who the others were. I mean, yeah. But I love my experience here. I love my degree. And now they have the BIS for people that can come in. But I do wish the university would open the admissions policy that you could work on your degree part-time. I mean, I love my English degree, and it's not possible to do that without coming here full-time. And I think there'd be more diversity in the university if people could pursue their degrees that way. Thanks.
Yeah, I was in the class of 74, and just because nobody has spoken about it, I thought I would. I was in the Counselor's Committee on Human Sexuality.
Thank you, Dave.
and just to say, it was immensely needed, as you can imagine. I mean, both not only the women needed, you know, help, safety protection, but, you know, the men, some of them needed to change their attitudes, too. And I want to pay tribute to our gynecologist. Yes. And if one of you can remember his last name, yes. His first name was Ulysses Grant
Camp.
Turner.
Turner Camp.
Yeah.
Well, who was
Dr. U.G. Turner.
Okay.
And U.G. Turner was, you know, sort of the, he helped us in the Counselor's Committee on Human Sexuality and was a great supporter and made sure we were well-educated, we were protected. And, by the way, this reminds me of a story. When I was a freshman, I was eating in the famous horrible cafeteria that we all gave up when we could. And I was sitting with a male student, and he, you know, out of the blue says, "Are you on the pill?" You know, I'm from Richmond. I've never thought of it. I said, "Well, no." He said, "Well, you better get on the pill." And I thought, you know, what audacity. I mean, anyway. So the Counselor's Committee on Human Sexuality was important, and it helped us all. And thank you, Dr. Turner.
I want to acknowledge this moment. This has to be the first time in the history of the university and an alumni gathering where there's been given a shout-out to the gynecologist.
What experiences outside the classroom had the biggest impact on your overall student experience?
I mean, for me, clearly, was the honor system. The responsibility as chair. I mean, I was just grappling with the gravity of the experience in the cases that you dealt with and working with your colleagues who also were grappling with the gravity of the system. I'd have to say for a very long time I thought about and agonized over that, and I think it has shaped not only my moral compass but my willingness and ability to take risk and be comfortable with taking risk and making choices. So definitely the honor system.
I agree with Glenn, and what I would also say is just the concept of student self-governance and self-autonomy. That has definitely shaped who I am, even to this day. And, you know, as someone who also worked with other students from other campuses, like William & Mary and so forth, every time we did something with them, I would always wonder, how can you get anything done? Because they had to ask permission for everything, whereas here you were empowered, mm-hmm. whether you were female or male, to do what you wanted. If it wasn't hurting anyone else and it was for the betterment of the community, then you were encouraged and you were supported, and there was that sense that you could do anything that you set your mind to. And I still believe that.
Very similar to you. My experience was governed by what I got involved in, which was the resident staff, and just kind of worked my way up there. And I always felt I was a little, things were over my head, that you were asked to do things that you had absolutely no idea what to do. But it was experience that was so valuable because, you know, we all are capable of far more than we think we are. And so the stretch was very good. And, you know, it started out, for me, just involvement with women, and then I was having to take charge of groups, and men and women, and it went from there. So it was very, very valuable.
I guess I should answer, too. I think also student self-governance, I don't think I really realized truly what it meant until maybe my third year when I stepped into the position of chair of resident staff, and also with that position, having the ability to sit on a number of committees that, you know, give students a voice among the whole community. And I don't think you see those things as a, you know, student who maybe is not as involved. This summer, I went to a conference that they do called L2K, where they kind of unite all the leaders of the university to come together and meet faculty and such. And this summer, we came up with the Get Grounded campaign, which to me really showed the power of student self-government. It was in response to a lot of the, not apathy, but the inactive addressment of issues that were going on grounds. And I think that we had the opportunity to sit in front of, you know, leaders, Vice President Lampkin, and this also went to the Board of Visitors and decision makers at the university. So that really showed that, like, the student voice really does count. And I look at my counterparts at other universities, like you said, William & Mary, Virginia Tech. They don't have that same, yeah, UNC. They don't have that same conviction with student self-governance. So I really do value that. Another question we'll get into. What are the unique opportunities or challenges women face today as students and alumni? And if you want to chime in also, please feel free.
I don't really have anything to say on that one.
You go ahead.
I think you should answer that.
Yeah. As students, I think the biggest thing is, at least for me, is just I feel more like not – a student in the classroom, but I feel very committed to my activities outside the classroom. And that takes up most of my time here. I don't think it's a challenge. I think it's great. It's just finding that balance between being an outstanding student and also devoting yourself, because I've learned the most from my relationships outside the classroom, from my experiences. So that may be a challenge, just time management. Anything else? Anybody else?
For me, I'm still involved in publishing, and I'd say it's sort of the digital divide that I need to keep track of the latest computer developments and how to use a digital camera and telephones, and I just feel like I need to go back to university and have 6 months of catch-up or patch or repair of my learning, because they keep moving the goalposts, I find.
Well, I think talking about time management, throw in kids. And I think that's a challenge for many women, despite many people having very supportive spouses. And these policies you talked about earlier today, it falls almost exclusively to the women to raise the kids. And so trying to use the excellent education you have in a way that accommodates the tremendous job that parenting is my hugest challenge, I feel.
So I have a question as a complete outsider. So I look at the panelists and I see 74, 86, 98, and current. So the question is, what has university done to advance the cause of women in the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years to really be a forefront figure in advancing the issues of women, pay equity, a balanced work life, all the issues of sexism? What has the university done to actually address those issues in a very tangible way?
I'll say that a lot of change at the university is driven by alumni and student initiative.
Try this one.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say a lot of change at the university is driven by alumni and student initiatives and sort of institutional shifts. And clearly women coming to the university was a respected but sleepy organization until women came on ground. And when you trace back the history of the university, the presence of women has really been the fuel of driving the university to be a national institution. And a part of that is the role that women have started to play, and we talked about it, the panelists talked about it earlier today, in setting standards, in exercising power, in creating policy. So a woman president, a vice provost for diversity and equity, the female dean of the College of Arts and Sciences. When you have women in roles of authority, setting standards, setting agendas, that at an international institution, you are leading the world in those areas.
Hi, I'm Paulette Morant, Paulette Jones Morant, PJ Morant, class of 74. And just to respond to your question about the tangible part, I want to give what we call a shout out to the Women's Center, because we didn't have a Women's Center. It's not that we felt that we needed one. I guess maybe we were so new that we were just getting ourselves for our camaraderie. We had a special bond as class of 74 members, and actually we did know that there were women at the university ahead of us who came in by themselves, who transferred in with no place to live, or many of our, I guess, friends of the family of some of the students had had somebody who had gone to grad school in education. But I say fast forward to the Women's Center, which was formed in 1989, because what I like that they do a lovely job with the younger girls in what they call the Young Women's Leadership Program, and they try to catch them really early in life. And I think that's the thing. If you can catch somebody that young and tell them there's nothing you can't do, then you'll be inspired. And I think the class of 74 and 73, because you all, we love you, nobody told us we couldn't do anything. So I think we got the message, and we just want to pass that on.
I started with the class of 78, and because of a death in the family, dropped out of school and came back and ended up finishing up in 96. So it was just such a huge shift in that 20 years. But the one thing that I noticed is that when I came back, it was because my youngest was in kindergarten. I had the time. I commuted from Lexington. And the first full semester I was back in school, I had to do my language requirement. So I was taking one of those everyday
early morning
classes. Yes, one early morning classes, which meant I had to leave before my child left for school. And she started to have some separation issues and something going on in the classroom. And I went to the instructor and said, is there any way I could take some like a 10 o'clock just for a couple of weeks and get her through this? And she was like, oh, sure. I'll check with my, you know, whatever, and we'll get that done. And I have a friend who's teaching a 10 o'clock class, and that's not a problem. Just, that's great. Just here's where you go. And I couldn't have imagined anybody, A, at 38 in one of my classes when I was 18, and then that it was just no big deal, and that people were so accommodating and helpful. And certainly when I got here in 74 and had a deaf family and whatever, my academic dean, Ellen Deese, who was a wonderful, wonderful dean, was great. And I would say Captain Bob, as we call him, Bob Canavieri, I remember going to him and telling him I needed to have a car on grounds. I was only, it was the first semester, and you weren't allowed to have them the first semester. And so I went to his office and I said, I really need to have a car. I need to be able to get back and forth to home because my younger brother. And he said, well, you know, the way we do that here is you need to write me a letter, make a formal request. And I immediately thought, I didn't bring any paper. You have to go back to my dorm. And he reached in his desk and took out a pen and a piece of paper and said, so write me a letter. But I think the interesting thing was that seemed to be, you know, for 20 years that I needed to come to an hour later class, and it was no big deal. How can we help you? And so I always felt like that was kind of it. My youngest daughter, who was in kindergarten and first grade during that era, just graduated last year.
Oh, wow.
So another 10 years for me. And to see how, you know, they have the Women's Center and they do all this stuff, and it's just amazing to see. So when you say, what has the university done, I think they've always been willing. It's sometimes that we had to point out a need or just ask. And sometimes that's hard for women to say, I need help. Because most of us, especially if you came here early on, we're used to just doing. And asking for help was foreign to us. And often is. So I think the university has always been open to saying yes.
I want to say something else about the Young Women Leaders Program. So because I don't think Sharon's going to say it. For those of you who didn't hear about it last night, it's a great program, which PJ has already pointed out. Not only is it a great program, which brings 7th and 8th grade girls together with the young women of the University of Virginia, giving young girls at a time when they can be getting societal messages of conform, you may not be as good as you think you are, giving them messages of you can be empowered. It's also teaching our students leadership. This program is replicated elsewhere. This is a national model, and we are very proud of it. And there's also IRIS, a magazine for women, which is also a national publication, which gets information about the Women's Center and gives opportunities for various people to learn about publication that comes out through the Women's Center. So in terms of being a leader, the Women's Center does continue some notable activities. But the YWLP, definitely an award-winning program that people look to replicate.
Just one thing that I wanted to comment about. I remember at one of these other groups, I was class of 74 also, someone once commented that one of the reasons that things weren't set up for women when we got here, other than not knowing what we wanted, was that Mr. Jefferson would have wanted it that way. The story went that when Mr. Jefferson laid out the university, he didn't put any paths in. He figured that the paths would develop where people wanted to walk. And I think that was exactly what he did for us. We walked, and then we said, wait, there's no basketball team for women or whatever, and then those things developed. So I think it was in honor to Mr. Jefferson, and I appreciate that everyone in this room has referred to the man as Mr. Jefferson. I can't stand it when that has fallen by the wayside. So,
thank you. So I'm the director of the Women's Center, and I thank Paulette and Wynn. I wanted to mention, going back to your question at the very beginning, when you were talking about pay equity, you were talking about issues of various issues, social issues. One thing is that the students themselves come to the Women's Center and have projects that are very often projects of service. And so, are in response often to something that has happened. So, for instance, the governor of the state of Virginia created, I think it was this year, maybe he did it last year and then did it again this year, but a special day to honor the Confederacy. And so a whole group of women students came together and decided to have Ella Baker Day. Ella Baker was a pioneering woman in the civil rights movement and have invited people from around the country to be able to contribute to our knowledge of women in the civil rights movement. At the Women's Center supports that. You know, we're there to help with the structure, the, you know, mentoring or advising. But, you know, just now as then, the women students at UVA themselves have an enormous amount of creativity. There are men who marched into the Women's Center and said, you have a young women leaders program, what about a men's leadership program, a project for men? And they're developed with men at the university, students, the notion that where they could really hang their hats was to work with not only other students, but with young boys around the issues of understanding that a man, to be a man, was to have strength, to be respected, did not include violence, did not include bullying at all. And in fact, they could be those people who intervened. They could be the people who stepped forward and changed things. So, you know, I guess what this is a shout out to the students, really. The last thing that I'll say is a little different. There's a Living Wage campaign as well. But the last thing that I want to say is a little bit different. And this is something that, because it's so confidential, it's so private, it's not so much something that people talk to each other about. But the counseling services at the center has been working really closely with CAPS, which is the Student Health Counseling and Psychological Services. And the center has become a place where students who have experienced violence, and this is female students, whether that's sexual assault or partner violence, intimate partner violence of some kind, or stalking. We have a special counselor for that, along with the other counselors, who's has very much expertise. And so they come, and it is a process of change that is as important as international change, which students are also working on.
And the really important thing, I think, is that the university units, we, for instance, the Women's Center, work with the Dean of Students Office, work with CAPS, the Counseling and Psychological Services, that it's not, you know, that you can do something strong when you work with other people. Students know that. And I think that we at the university have come to know that in a stronger way. Thanks.
Are there any additional questions from the floor?
I think one thing that we haven't talked about, and again, I'm class 79, is the effect of the Greek system on women at the university. I'm sitting with a co-founder. We have a couple of co-founders of a sorority on grounds here, and I don't think initially, I don't know whether there was the desire to create sororities because your whole class was in effect a sorority. I think when we came to grounds, there were four or five sororities, and I don't know how many there are now, but it was a big deal. And I think that the fraternity system, at least in our era, had as much to do with reinforcing some of the good old boy male stereotypes as did, you know, than did the administration itself. And I'd be curious to hear how the Greek system has changed there and grown or not grown during that period, both for men and women.
I can say for the class of 74, I never talked to a single woman who was interested in being a member of a sorority. It was just kind of a sign of the times. It wasn't because we had 443 sorority sisters. We just had decided that we wanted to fit in, and that was part of the way things used to be, and we felt like we had something to prove. Annette Gibbs told a hilarious story during our reunion 2 years ago where apparently all the nationals came in and were at waiting at the airport and were going to come and set up tables at Newcomb Hall, and she had to get on the phone and tell them, no, you need to return to wherever you came from, because until our women students ask for something, we have a policy of not asking people to come in from the outside. So as far as I know, there was no sorority activity the 4 years we were there, other than maybe what was existing through the nursing school and things like that. And I think ultimately we probably did need to have organizations where women could go and maybe some function somewhat like a sorority, but we just didn't recognize it until we were about to graduate, I think. So.
Okay. Good.
To say is not really on the subject of what we've been talking about, but with all of the shout-outs, I would like to give one to Roberta Hollingsworth Guathme. And I think there's a building or an area here that's named for her. What's that? Good. I have to go see it. When I first came to UVA, it was 1957, and she was the support system. She was the Women's Center. And I didn't see a lot of her, but when we knew her, she was there. And I just hope everybody appreciates what she did.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about listening to people's reflections about the university and different things that they started because there was critical mass, because there were more women, because there were more Latinas, that sort of thing. And so it's sort of not the university. The university is us. You know, it's the showing initiative, creating critical mass,
not having things handed to you, having to go out and get it yourself and find a support system is what it's about. So it's a little, to me, it's a little bit of a paradigm shift as women come to equal parity is, you know, when it was mostly men here, the university was about that. And as more people are coming in, there's more diversity, it's this more universal. The university is us, students, faculty, staff, alumni.
Hi, I'm Melissa Richards. I'm class of 1993, and I wanted to share a quick story about something that happened to me just yesterday that I believe would never have happened to me had I not had my student experiences here. I'm the director of marketing and publications at Virginia Tech. And yesterday, a half an hour before I hopped in the car to come here, I had three male marketing students in my office who were taking a leadership class. And their assignment was to choose someone in their field to interview and write an article about them. So that was kind of a moral victory, don't you think? Three male students interviewing a female administrator who graduated from UVA. So that, but I share with them this experience about my student experience here. One of the questions was, how did you learn to be a leader? Was it through experience? Was it in the classroom? Or was it by mentors? And I said, absolutely, hands down, it was the student experiences at UVA. I was involved in a number of extracurricular activities, leading organizations. And one of them, there was an associate dean here, Sybil Todd. I don't know if anyone remembers her. God rest her soul. She was a fabulous mentor for me, and she brought me in her office one day, and she said, I'm going to tell you a secret that many people are afraid to tell you. You have to take the education that you learned here and create your own opportunities, because there will not be as many opportunities for you as for women as there are for men, and you have to create your own. And I took that with me throughout my whole life and created opportunities, and I really believe that that's why I am where I am today.
Any more questions?
The questions on the paper.
Oh, far from notes. Okay. Glenn, we have a question for you. You were the first African-American female honor chair. What challenges were presented to you? And that, or was it a seamless transition from?
I have a story about that. I talked about earlier about the unique experience, I think, that students have with alums and how that continues on your experience. And so I was at when I was chair of the Honor Committee my fourth year, I was at an event where some student leaders had been invited to, interacting with alums. And this alum was going on and on about this. He had graduated in the 50s, and he was going on and on about the significance of the honor system, the value of the tradition. And he looked up and he said, I'm sure the chair of the Honor Committee is here. I hope I get a chance to meet him. And I thought to myself at that moment, this is a delicious moment.
In so many ways.
But for me, that is my UVA story. The ability to, there are traditions that bind us across generations, but the ability to be a part of that and to speak up and say this needs to be adapted and modernized from my view as a woman or my view as a minority. I was chair of the Honor Committee, and I took to my committee a proposal to change the single sanction, and my committee voted it down. And then I started a student group to put it on a referendum. The students voted it down. I believe wholeheartedly in the honor system. We revamped it procedurally, and it was highly regarded for streamlining it, making it efficient, effective, higher participation of students. But I still struggled with the sanction. And so I wasn't afraid to be both an advocate for the honor system as a principle and a process and a tradition, and to be an advocate for it to change.
Deborah, question for you. What inspired you to found a Latina sorority, and what was the response from the university for your endeavor?
I think as Margaret said earlier, there was just a need for a sisterhood that kind of shared some of the traits and characteristics that I hold dear to me, and you didn't have that in the two systems, well, the three systems, right, the sororities, the fraternities, and then the historically black organizations. You didn't have that on grounds, and so we decided to make one for ourselves, and it was a long process. It took almost 2 years. We interviewed a lot of sororities and went to different organizations and decided on one. And when we brought it to the administrators, they didn't really know what to do with the information. So one, because where were they going to put us? Because there was what they considered the social Greeks, and then there was the service-oriented Greeks, including the historically black organization. So for a while, they put us in one sorority group. They put us with the Panhellenics. And then that didn't work out because there was no way that we were going to be able to meet the quota with 0.3% Latinos on campus. And then they try to put us with the historically black Greeks, but there's like policies, national policies related to having affiliate membership and so forth. Anyways, we wanted to have our own voice, so we established our own council. And now it's around. It includes much more than just Hispanic Latino organizations. It has Asian organizations and so forth. And there's more than just one Latina sorority on campus, on grounds. So it was, I think, one of the hardest things I did on campus, on grounds, but it's also one of the best things. Because it really, I actually finished the process when I was in graduate school here. So it definitely finished the cycle for me as to, like, me as self-empowered that I could do something. And even though there were certain administrators that really put a lot of obstacles in front of us because it really made a lot of changes to who and how they operated in terms of the Greek system on grounds. So.
And Janet, you were co-chair of resident staff. Can you tell us a little bit more about the living situation in the 1970s?
You know, you've already had, I think Ann was up here talking about that it was crazy. It was real crazy that first year. I don't think any of us were really prepared for what we ran into. I don't think it was almost like, you know, Bob Hope and the USO tour arrived. You know, at an army base, you would think that they had no mothers and no sisters. I mean, I don't quite understand it. I do remember going to pick up my key and running. The sidewalk was lined, and we had to go to housing, and there were men lining it, looking at all of us, and that was a little uncomfortable. I remember thinking about it later, and I thought, well, sure, they were checking us all out, but I think they also wanted to see how we looked as a group. They wanted to see what the university had admitted as a group. You know, what was the first class of women? And I think the fact that we, you know, went and picked up our keys and we didn't have three heads was, you know, oh, okay, that was good. But, yeah, it was an unusual situation. I think sometimes we just thought it was kind of funny. I think on our lower moments, it was pretty overwhelming. And I remember thinking that in some ways the classrooms were an oasis of safety, or you just oasis of comfort, I would say, because when you entered a classroom, there was an adult in charge, you know, and there were rules, and so there were both men and women there, and it was comfortable. The women held their own; they carried, you know, they were involved in class discussions, and it was very comfortable there. I remember not skipping classes; I liked going to my classes. They were good moments. I hear something going off. But as more women arrived, things got less and less crazy. I did have a unique skill, as did all my classmates, that learning to talk to six men at once and having a positive outcome is a life skill. Because they literally would. I mean, if your window was open and they saw you there, they would pound on the door. I saw you!
you know, let us in. And, you know, and then, you know, so you, these group of six guys would come and sit down. So if you weren't open to that, you either had to be in your room with the door locked, or you had to go to the library, a carol, or to a listening room. For those of you that have iPods, they used to have rooms where you got records, and you put them on the record player, and you put your earphones on, and for an hour you had absolute privacy. Privacy was very hard to come by, and I think in some way sororities could provide that. I mean, a place to go where you weren't constantly being scrutinized. But it was always exciting, and I think we just didn't let it get to us, and we felt unique and special. And the administrators always had our backs. They didn't, you know, they were subtle about it. You know, they were like really good parents. They were there when we needed them, and the rest of the time they didn't seem to be there. So I really appreciate what they did, particularly now that I'm a parent, because I know that it's hard to guide people without seeming to steer them, which is kind of what they do. So I guess that's it.
And as we kind of come to the end of our time, what is your one hope for female students?
You didn't answer that.
Oh, let me go ahead and answer that. So what is it like? My first year, I lived in Dolby, which is part of the new dorm suite styles. And I was surprised when I got there because I didn't know that men and women would be in the same, like, so close. So I was on the second floor. Below me was four first-year guys. And so the first thing, I think the first night, I noticed that it was just extremely rowdy. And because it was the guys underneath us. And our resident staff always tried to incorporate this sense of, like, we are Dolby, the building, you know, men and women together. And we had, like, our brother suite that we, like, went out, like, to dinner with and just shared common events with. So that was interesting. And I've never actually thought about how it would be any different. But pretty much in all first-year dorms and upper class, you know, men and women are mixed. And you really don't notice the difference, you know, in sex, I think, until you kind of hear the noise, the rowdiness, and,
I lived in the new dorms as well first year. It was co-ed. And my parents were moving me in, and my dad obviously hadn't gotten the full report. And he saw guys in the dorm, right, and he said, oh, that is so nice. Those guys are helping those girls move into the dorm.
Yeah. Any other residential experiences?
In 1974 in Dolby, third floor,
okay.
Two men and my father saying, like, what? but I distinctly remember a man streaking.
Oh, yeah.
No, that was kind of unusual. 1974, though.
And there was a motorcycle streaker down in the old dorms. Who went over the hills? Do you remember them?
Oh, my goodness. Aren't you all there? I just want to know why they still call them New
York. It's tradition.
Yeah, tradition.
I'll say something. I started in the fall of 94, and we actually had a housing shortage, and I'm not sure how it is now, but... And I think it was kind of late in the summer that they realized they were going to have this problem. So there were a lot of triples, especially in the new dorms. But then they also chose quite a few of us to have the opportunity to live in upper class housing. So it was actually in Roberta Guaffney, which was co-ed. And so that was really interesting in the first year, surrounded by especially older men up above and below us. And people had cars, and they could park. So we had kind of an interesting.
It's one of those people who transition from before
Kevin
to
Manix.
Education. If we take a look at what's been going on today, especially today, and absorb this, the gentleman was asking, what has the university done for women in the world or in society? The university has drawn in talented, capable women and shared them with the world, having given them education and training and mentoring. And just listening to the life experiences that have been reflected today, the university's gift is actually opening itself up, growing, and turning around and sharing with the world all the capabilities that are reflected in this room. And we weren't doing that. People wondered why we talk about 1970 as being the time of transition. The college was the heart of the university. It was the largest school. Yes, we had commerce, and we had education, and we had nursing, and we had law and all that. But the college was seen in this state as the heart of the university. Mm-hmm. And when the college opened up, it was seen by everyone as a major change. And there were some other changes going on. As a fraternity member, I saw how the fraternities had become a clique. And we saw how the independents became a powerful force and created their own political parties. You talk about student governance. Dr. Turner, came to the student council and said, we need a pamphlet for the students about sexuality. So we created an ounce of prevention. We didn't go to the administration and ask for permission.
Just did it.
We went to the experts. We created it with his assistance. And we gave it out to everybody. It was a matter of students being empowered and women joining in that empowerment movement. The shift is now we're talking about how do we change the world, not about urinals that need to have a pot of plants shown.
So now we'll get to our last question. What is your one hope for female students of the future?
Wow. It's a real biggie. I don't have children, but I have three nieces that I'm very close to, and one's heading off to college. And I would hope for female students like them, the ability to develop core principles and to develop skills and to have life experiences that allow them to grow and take risk in a healthy environment and to shape a path that is personal to them and rewarding to them.
That is a hard one. Yeah, you did answer it really well. Well, I think one thing that I will say is someone who's beginning to beginning her sprint professionally, having women that come after me further push the ceiling in terms of career goals and yes, being leaders on grounds and then taking it further and being leaders in corporate America and as well as in the public sector and the nonprofit sector and so forth, and even internationally, I think is what I hope for the female students in the future, that they can say whatever we did is great, but they're going to push it even further and they're going to feel as though they can. And they're going to break that ceiling. That's what I hope for them.
I really can't top that, and I probably should stop, but of course I won't. I would just hope that women students aim high, because even if, you know, the old saying, which I can't remember, of course, because I'm in my 50s. Anyway, but that you aim high, and even if you don't make it, you still, you achieve great things. And I think people should realize that everything you do, there'll be somebody along who comes behind you that you can pull up, and that's an important thing. I remember laughingly telling my friends I was very proud because from the group of women that I counseled the next year after I left, three of them took big responsibilities, major leadership positions, and I was probably excessively proud about that. And then I realized that probably the reason that they were able to do that is they figured that if I could do it, surely they could. So, and keep that in mind.
So, thank you to our parents. Well, let me just give you my hope for the female students, that when they come in, they would just kind of believe in the power of their voice and that they would just let it be heard within the university community, that there would be no limits and kind of no boundaries. A lot of times I think female students kind of hold themselves back when they start to doubt that their voice is actually being heard and acknowledged. So just to, and that female students would also empower one another because it's very easy to get competitive and I think maybe not be as supportive as they could be. So in conclusion, I'd like to thank you all for coming to this panel. I really do appreciate your participation, and I thank all the women to my left for their experiences and for sharing with us today. I hope you enjoy the rest of this weekend, and thank you again.
competitive information.